Welcome to Searching for Mana, the podcast that investigates the mana. That's the superpower in some of the most influential leaders who are building the future in tech innovation and finance. I'm Lloyd Whitehead, a London-born entrepreneur and headhunter with over 15 years' experience on a mission to discover what drives our guests to succeed. How have they got to the top? What attributes have excelled in their career? Listen to find out. Welcome to Searching for Mana. Andrea Bonaggetto, welcome on to Searching for Mana.
Thank you for inviting me.
Pleasure to have you on the show. Fuller introduction. Andrea Bonaggetto is a partner at Eterna Capital, who are a leading investment firm in the blockchain space. Andrea founded the company with three former BlackRock employees, and he's also earned a spot on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list, amongst many other accolades. Andrea is also running an accelerator, which we'll go into. But firstly, Andrea, it'd be really useful for the audience if you could explain Eterna Capital's mission, please.
Okay, so Eterna Capital is an investment firm that operates in the blockchain space. As you said, I started Eterna Capital with three ex-BlackRock employees. We were investing as a group of friends, even prior launching Eterna, that was launched in 2018. So we had a very successful first fund, and now we're in the process of launching a second fund. So we invest in early stage blockchain projects, mostly at seed, at Series A. And we also run an accelerator here in Europe called Algorand Europe Accelerator, which is linked to one of the investments we had in our first fund called Algorand, which is a blockchain platform mostly focused on the financial sector, very high profile project. And what we're doing here in Europe is we are selecting projects that are using Algorand technology. They're looking for funding. So we are giving startups 15,000 euros to each selected startup. They go through 12 weeks acceleration program. And then in the end, there is a demo day where they can raise more, you know, and we also see it on the demo day as a fund, you know, to potentially follow on. And this is an initiative led by us, Algorand Foundation, and Borderless Capital, which is the ecosystem fund of Algorand.
So if we focus on the first fund that you said has been very successful, firstly, congratulations. Let's try and break that down for the audience so they understand what that was made up of. So one of the investments was the accelerator you just spoke about. And what else constituted that first fund?
So in when we launched our first fund, the main bottleneck in the technology, in the blockchain tech space, was around infrastructures, basically. So having a blockchain platform that is like scalable, secure, and decentralized at the same time. So we really made many investments in the protocol and infrastructure layer. So we have invested in products such as Algorand, Dfinity, Terra Hashgraph, Origin Protocol, are quite like well-known projects, and we managed to get in quite early. And I think, you know, that was a right bet for us, because we do see the blockchain space evolving as sort of oligopoly of blockchain platforms, each of them addressing a certain market, and projects then, when they decide to pick one or another, they just, you know, pick based on what they want to optimize. So what we think is that now we are moving towards a situation where the building blocks are pretty much stable. There are like some high profile blockchain platforms that are getting good traction. And now it's really interesting to see the next Amazon built on the blockchain, the next Facebook on the blockchain, the next Airbnb on the blockchain. So more on the applications, basically.
So does it feel like it's mirroring the move that was made when everything went onto the internet? And now, if you look at the ecosystem was created there, you just mentioned Amazon, for instance, you're seeing the building blocks being blockchain, and everybody's just trying to recreate the internet companies onto that blockchain.
Yeah, I think that definitely there are many analogies with the internet. One thing is, you know, platforms like Ethereum, I think they basically unfold the potential of blockchain. They were, let's say, the first movers in the space. But then, you know, the ones that they really brought like adoption to the masses sometimes, you know, were the second movers that actually understood the limitations of the first movers and then tried to create something, you know, that was addressing that problems from inception, something like Algorand and other blockchain platforms are doing. So what we feel is these platforms, you know, are definitely picking up, are doing very good progress. And now you will start seeing the applications built on top of the different platforms. But it's very similar to the internet. You know, what if you think about it, internet like democratized access to information, blockchain is democratizing like sharing of value on the internet without any intermediary. So what we feel is that is a paradigm shift of a similar magnitude, if not bigger than the internet. And we are not alone thinking about that. You know, you have the likes of the World Economic Forum saying that by 2025, up to 10% of the world GDP will be on the blockchain. We have had, you know, PayPal opening up to digital assets and basically giving hundreds of millions of people the possibility to buy goods, you know, with digital assets. You have the CIO of BlackRock saying that digital assets are here to stay. So I think it's a revolution that is happening, and we are very happy to be part of it.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Completely agree. And sticking with that fund, what level of capital did you have to invest, and did you invest?
Yeah, so the first fund was basically a family and friends fund. It wasn't, you know, that big. Yep. So for us, it was really about building our track record and then go with a more institutional product later on, and that's what we are doing now. So our second fund is a fully regulated fund, and we aim to address, you know, larger investors, larger clients.
And you've raised the second fund?
We are raising it at the moment. So we're planning to launch by the Q1 2021. So that's when we want to do our first close. Yeah, it's going well. It's going very well. We got a lot of interest. We're targeting around 30, 50 million in terms of size of the fund. And yeah, is of course, like, the sentiment around blockchain is very good right now, which for sure helps. On the other hand, you know, you have the COVID situation that, of course, slows down a bit the possibility of, you know, meeting people face to face and things like that. Of course, if you have existing relationships, you can do things over, you know, Zoom and video calls. But, you know, if you have to meet new people, it's definitely important to meet them in person. And this has been a bit delayed. But hopefully, you know, we're getting out of this soon.
And so the lessons that you learned from the first fund that you'll be taking to the second, things that would be interesting to understand are, what did you learn to look for if you break that down in terms of founders? So I know that the accelerator, for instance, was or is ran by a prominent individual from MIT. Is this correct?
This is the Algorand blockchain itself. So it was founded by MIT professor of computing science.
Yeah.
The accelerator itself, you know, is run pretty much by us. And, you know, as I said, the foundation and Borderless Capital.
And then if you're looking at, so you're looking at the founders, you're looking at the space. So as you mentioned, 3 years ago, it's very much infrastructure. Now it's, what are the sharing economies that are going to come onto that? And then just talk to us about that and also what else you're going to be looking for.
Yeah, so we have identified several trends in the second fund, you know, that we want to invest in. I think on the infrastructure side, you know, there is still something that can be done. And, you know, is a space that we're still looking at, even though I think there is less room compared to a couple of years ago. Then another very interesting trend is, I think, digital ownership as well. So, you know, we are used to a situation where, you know, you go on Google, Facebook, Amazon, you just, you know, give your data to large corporations and, you know, they can use it. You use their platforms for free most of the times, but you don't monetize your data. And I think this is going to change, and people are, I think, already more aware than, you know, a few years ago that their data is very valuable and can be monetized. And if you think that 98% of the data ever created in the history of humanity has been created over the past 2 years, you understand that that's quite compelling, right? So I think the trend that we see is people getting ownership of their own data. They store it on the blockchain. They decide to who to give access to their information, and they can monetize it. I think this is a very interesting trend. Then as well, the traceability trend is also interesting. If you think about, you know, supply chain, you know, it is an industry among, you know, with others where the usage of blockchain is very compelling, where, you know, you can really remove many inefficiencies from the picture by leveraging this technology. And then I think another one is like an obvious use case is marketplaces. So you can really disrupt marketplaces where you take out the middleman and you let the buyer and the seller pretty much interact directly, and you redistribute the value between the two of them. I think it's interesting that some time ago, I looked at a video on YouTube of Milton Friedman, the economist from Chicago. You know, he won the Nobel Prize, very famous. In 1999, he had an interview saying, internet is amazing, basically showing how internet is great. And then he says, one thing that is missing is digital cash, you know, where I, on the internet, can send money from A to B without A knowing B, the same way I handle like a $10 note to you, right? You know, you see, like, this is something that pretty much is happening now. Like, you can move value on the internet now without any intermediary. Of course, it's a big revolution, like, it's very profound. In fact, for me, it's always very important to really try to convey the potential in general, you know, blockchain that goes, you know, beyond the you know, most common things that you sometimes see are making the headlines on newspapers, right? If you go deep, you understand that there are many areas that are interesting. The one that I mentioned, I think, are definitely areas to look at, but there are for sure even others.
Looking at this from my own perspective, let's think about the movement of talent. So, you know, recruitment, headhunting has some good internet efforts, but actually you get to a point of transaction. And so if you were to say, okay, well, how about we put a recruitment process onto the blockchain, and the digital currency is how there was the exchange at the transactional point, then that conceptually works fantastically well at some point when it doesn't only work for 10% of the customers. And so that's the slight problem with this. There's going to be a tipping point. So, you know, where I've seen it perhaps work is, let's say, big institutions who are moving money around on both sides understand that this is valuable for them to do it. It's more efficient. That's working. But when you start looking at all the different sectors where this could conceptually be useful, there's going to need to be this tipping point where more people use digital currencies than don't for it to work. And so how do you see that being addressed so that at some point it would be obvious to someone like me to go to my clients, we're going to exchange digital currencies here? Or quite frankly, in that scenario, I'm not in the middle anymore. The candidate and the client are having some type of exchange themselves, whichever way it works.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, digital currencies is an application of blockchain technology, which is quite interesting, but it's not the only one. I think I basically see a society that basically has blockchain tech as back-end technology. You know, many people basically will use it without even knowing it, that they're using it the same way you use, you know, your phone. Now you know, we exchange messages on WhatsApp. You don't know exactly what's happening, you know, behind the scene, but you just know that it works better and you use it, right? So I think that probably, you know, if there is an application in recruiting, could be on the back end. I don't know if people, you know, will, I don't know how compelling it is for people, you know, to basically tell them, hey, transact in digital assets, you know, for that specific use case.
It's like, you know, if you're paying in a taxi using your card at the moment, you know, you don't know what merchant that's going through necessarily. You're just, okay, I'm going to pay £18 here for this taxi ride. And what you suspect is going to happen is that in 2-5 years time, then instead of it going via a merchant, it could be exchanging directly through the back end being the blockchain.
Yeah, there are. So we made an investment, to give an example, in a platform like a challenger bank. I won't disclose the name because we haven't announced it yet publicly, but basically what they do is you can put digital assets on that card, right? You can put Bitcoin, then you can go to Starbucks and you can buy a coffee. You yourself pay with Bitcoin, but on the back end, this is basically exchanged to pounds. The Starbucks gets pounds, you get Bitcoins, and the currencies, the digital assets you have on that card are also insured up to £50,000.
So the benefit of that is perhaps I have a large holding of a particular currency or two. I don't want to completely get rid of the investment because I might feel like it's a good long-term appreciating asset. But actually, I'd prefer to spend a bit of it on my coffee every now and again.
Yeah, you could. Yes. But I don't know if, like, one trend, you know, that I see that is very interesting around, you know, the usage of digital assets, you know, in day-to-day life is when you look at CBDC, so like central bank digital currencies. I think that we're going to see a digital version of the pound, of the dollar, of the euro. Makes perfect sense. Is way more efficient. If you look at the, you know, helicopter money kind of monetary policies applied by central banks in this situation with, you know, COVID and many issues, it's something that is very easy to do if, you know, your citizens have a wallet where you can just, you know, drop money basically in a second, right?
Yep.
And there are many other banks, like we can really get to a borderless economy where many inefficiencies are removed. This doesn't mean that you will have like hundreds of thousands of digital assets, you know, because of course at a certain point, particularly in 2017, you did see a crazy like ride of everyone wanted to use blockchain for anything, right? Maybe it didn't even make any sense, but you know, you use the word blockchain and you were able to raise a lot of money. This, you know, even with the internet, it happened, right? You do have like different cycles. I think that the long-term sustainable opportunity is in projects that they generally need blockchain. Sometimes they don't even, you know, have a token. You don't need necessarily to have that. And then, you know, when you think about day-to-day usage, I think digital currencies like central bank digital currencies will be used quite a lot. Because you also see that it's not only about technology, right? It's also about, it's a more like a philosophical point about should someone like, you know, Facebook actually create a coin that is better than the US dollar? Because, you know, it's pegged to the US dollar, then there is also pegged to another basket of assets. So, you know, even Libra itself, that I am now actually rebranded, had to go through a lot of scrutiny and changes from their initial idea that was amazing from a technological standpoint. But then when, you know, you want to rival like central banks, there are probably some boundaries that governments put. And to be honest, you know, we can debate on that, you know, whether it's good or right. But it is what it is. Like now they are, I think, adapting and basically positioning themselves in a situation where they can still do like part of their initial vision while, you know, being compliant as well with the regulators and, you know, making basically everyone happy.
So if I look across the thesis as well, something I noticed, Andrea, was Eterna prioritized investments in socially impactful companies. Why is that?
Well, I think blockchain is philosophically aligned with having a positive impact in society. If you think about it, it's all about redistributing value to actually who creates the value, right? So you remove any inefficiency and you also create, I think, a more inclusive economy. I personally, you know, think that we are going towards a society where you really monetize your information. Internet of Things is something, very prominent as well. It's a very big trend. You may be on a few like IoT devices that are performing some actions while you are asleep, and you're getting rewarded in some digital assets. And so, you basically free yourself from this 9-to-5 mentality and identifying yourself with a certain work, and you liberate yourself and you do what you want. So I think that even situations like, universal basic income are definitely possible with the usage, like the full scale of this technology. Actually, I would recommend you to read a book that I found very useful. It's called World After Capital from Albert Wagner. It's like really insightful book that, made me think about, beyond the investment itself, the change that can bring to society, technology like blockchain and the benefits that it can bring. Because, now we take it for granted, like, oh yeah, it's normal, you 80-90% of your life you work, you have very not much free time, to do whatever it is that you want to do. And most of the people also, they don't enjoy what they're doing 9-to-5. But I think this, could change. Like, you could definitely have a situation where you have a more balanced life, where you do gain an income from activities that you perform just because you exist. You create data and you are part of the IoT economy, blockchain economy. So I think it will really change how society operates. And that's what interests me, to be honest, in the blockchain. Like, the reason why I, to be honest, got interested in the space was because the people I felt were involved in the blockchain space were quite interesting as, characters. And it was, I empathize a lot, with the mission of the space. Because whenever I do something, I like to, find some meaning in it, We want to support in the end, even with the Tana Capital, projects that are good for society, that are pushing it forward, they're making it better. So I think it's definitely aligned with having, positive social impact.
There's not always been an opportunity to, over the last 15, 20 years, be ambitious and create value for yourself, but also feel like you're doing it with purpose where it has an additive value to society. And for sure, one of the things that seems to be a value in the blockchain community or the crypto community, where people are like heavily involved in actually building it, is that it's this really nice feeling of, this could be better. Like you say, we don't want to live in a world like it was 20 years ago. We want to create a more sharing, valuable ecosystem. And so you found yourself, Andrea, in a brilliant position where, the thing that you're doing intellectually stimulates you. You're getting to be creative, but also there's a feeling of purpose within it. So this is perfect for the Searching for Mana show, because that's what I'm also looking for the whole time. And we had a conversation before you came onto the show, and what I found just as interesting was some of the stuff that you do outside of, let's call it work, more of a kind of purpose and career, what I think you're building at the moment. It just kind of made me think that you're really fortunate that you found this where it combines all of those things together. Where do you think, by the way, fortunate, I'm sure you've put a lot of work into getting this position. So let's try and talk the audience through that so they can understand your journey. Where do you remember, if you think back, the first time being where you really thought, okay, this is what I want to do with my career?
Really, it's not something that one day I set up, that's exactly what I want to do. It's really a process. For me, it's trying to always be, as much as I can, honest with myself, with who I am, what are my inclinations, what I really want to do, and search. Really keep changing, never taking anything as an assumption. I'm open to question anything that I even said up to now and completely changed my mind if you convince me that, you know, what I said is stupid. Maybe there is something, you know, stupid that I said. Completely fine. Like, I'm completely open with that. So it's a process for me of research. And there was never like me deciding, oh, yeah, definitely, you know, this is the way I want to do things. I'm 100% sure. It's just, you know, being able to change constantly and adapt to different situations, different trends. One thing that also I realize is that it's important that you're very humble with yourself, in the sense that even if you are a genius, okay, but you are trying to solve the wrong problem, you're going to fail. Not saying fail in the sense of, you know, creating a billion-dollar company. I'm saying that you not have the impact that you want to have. So with blockchain, I felt that I was part of something that was way bigger than me and was going to happen regardless of me. And I could choose to be out of it or be in it, and I prefer to be in it.
Is this community just equally distributed at the moment? If I'm an executive at the moment, or I'm at Imperial University, wherever it might be, I'm thinking, this sounds compelling to go and work in progressing this space. You know, maybe I'm at BlackRock, whatever it is. Is it like you had San Francisco and Silicon Valley, which is also distributing now. Are there pockets of places like London that you'd recommend going to, or actually it's just on the internet?
No, I think that, you know, I don't want to hide behind the finger, in the sense that at the moment, if you're in London, if you are in, you know, San Francisco, in other areas of the world where, you know, you really have technology actually being created there, it definitely helps, because, you know, you meet many people that right now, you know, are very interesting and they're actually working on these tech solutions. But I think that the trend, and we have already started seeing that in the blockchain space, because many teams, if you even take Ethereum, right, it's like a distributed community of developers that is keeping the network alive, right? It's amazing. Like, they meet for like large conferences, but, you know, it's not something where everything is happening in a city. But I still think that, you know, they're basically already in the future. They live in the future already. The real world is still not there, and there is still, I think, value in going, you know, to, of course, very good universities, being in a large city. But I hope that moving forward, it gets more, you know, democratized. It is more accessible. And I think that we already start seeing that, because even if you take, you know, you want to take a course from Harvard University or MIT, you can do it online. So the thing is, the access to knowledge now with the internet is there. You can get that knowledge, right? What you cannot get is the connection with people, knowing a person, like going through a lot of things personally with the people that you would meet there that are for sure intellectually very stimulating. And that's how I think, to be honest, in general, the education system in the future should be, you know, something where you basically meet people, you collaborate with people, you share opinions, like, you know, like a ancient Greek kind of model where you talk, because people now, they don't talk much about issues that matter. So you just talk, you share your views, and then about knowledge, you can get it anywhere. You can go on Coursera and become an expert on blockchain.
I wanted to just finish on the company, actually. So not in terms of what you're doing, what you've invested in, but you set this up with a few individuals who you'd work with at BlackRock. How's that dynamic, and what are the plans for the company? So you're going to hopefully raise this successful next fund. What do you see the scale of the business looking like internally?
First of all, I mean, I want to say that the way we always thought about what we're doing is like, we started as a group of friends investing in blockchain, and we continue to be a group of friends investing in blockchain. Very open, transparent, really. That's, I think, how we want to keep it. A very flat organization. And in terms of what we are aiming to do is, you know, we want to become like a big investment house in the blockchain space. So by having, you know, multiple funds, multiple strategies, and continuing supporting this, you know, paradigm shift the best we can on many areas. And, you know, you need to also accept that right now you won't be able to foresee everything, but what you can foresee is that a change will happen and you need to be able to react quickly. So, because, you know, network effects are very important, right? In general, for the internet, with blockchain are even more important. So the level at which change happens is even faster compared to normal, like, internet businesses. So you need to be able to capture that and be very lean and adapt.
Lots of other funds are going to go after this space. And I'm not just, it's not a scenario where just one wins, right? But you're competitive, you guys want to be the best.
No, but even there, one second, it's important that, maybe I used the wrong word, like, it's also a collaborative space in the sense that, you know, we work very closely with many funds. We share deals, we collaborate. And I think that this probably, you know, now is happening a lot because the space is still very young and there is a lot. Maybe once it gets more crowded, it will be different. But I hope that at that point also, as I said, we are in a more like collaborative economy in general by default on many fronts. So this will be reflected also in the dynamics of a more crowded industry.
And how are you making sure you're on top of the best deals? You are spending and your founders are spending a bunch of time researching, talking to people, having an open mind, abreast of everything. But of course, as the space gets more mature, you're going to need research as well. How does the actual process work?
Yeah, definitely. So our research function is very important. We do research many projects. I think, like, for the first fund, we ended up investing like in 5 projects. We received more than, you know, 500 projects that we actually went through and analyzed. You know, I think in our case, you know, we were quite fortunate to be plugged into like the pioneers of the blockchain space. So having like this very, very inner circle of people that actually started this industry, they're connected with us and we constantly engage with. And whenever there is a good deal, we are aware of it. And we also scout good deals and share with these people. So it's like, in this case, it is a bit a small community, right? That is like talking with each other. And I think funds also from the US and Asia that often co-invest with us understood that having us on the cap table is very useful, because when we are on the cap table, we don't only, you know, invest, but we also support projects on many fronts. You know, we're very well connected with all the universities here, even with Algorand. You know, they came here, Silvio, the founder, came and delivered presentations at the University of Cambridge, Imperial. We're now running the accelerator for them. And we, in general, like, open up our network. We're also connected with many corporates that are interested in deploying blockchain solutions. So all these things, you know, are very valuable and for us are relatively, you know, easy to deliver, because it's something that we have. It's just about, you know, to decide with who we want to basically open up that network with. And of course, we want to do it with projects that we think are very high profile.
For the final section, I wanted to let the audience understand some of the side projects that you're involved with, because it's really cool. Andrea shared with me a portfolio of digital art that he creates, and then also let me know that I think you sometimes are found playing live guitar in Camden. Just you know, just whilst running the blockchain.
Bit of a weird mix.
It's amazing. I don't know how you find time for it, but it's so healthy to be able to do that. And what are you up to as your latest art?
But I think, you know, one thing that also, this is something that you asked me before, you know. I think it's important to highlight is that personally, I don't really have, I don't necessarily think it works for everybody, okay? It really depends on your personality. But in my case, I don't have a work-life balance in the sense that everything is combined and interrelated. So that's, you know, how I like to do it. So I normally, you know, look into something, I get very interested, and then I try to approach it from several fronts. I give you an example with the digital art, right? I became very interested in non-fungible tokens, right? I think that the art world is going to go there. It's a no-brainer for me. You know, when I was a kid, I used to collect Pokemon cards. Next generation will not do that. They will collect digital representations of Pokemon cards. It's exactly the same things. They are unique. There is no problem with like counterfeit, like forgeries and stuff. So I approach it like from, I'm interested into that. You know, even from an investment standpoint, it's something that I think we should look at because, you know, NFT marketplaces are very interesting and I think is a very new trend that is going to pick up a lot. But then, you know, personally, I draw myself and like, okay, let's get an NFT as well, you know, for the drawings that I do. So I did it. And about, you know, music and the fact that I have a busking license here in London and I go sometimes to play, around, of course, like pre-COVID, is something is just who I am, you know. So I really decided that I don't want to make any compromise on who I am. I want to give a very honest and brutal, like, representation of myself. You take it or not, like, I'm like that, okay? And this is, for me, psychologically very liberating, you know, because I think I can perform my best when I'm in that process of doing things that are coherent with myself. Doesn't mean that I have achieved anything, to be honest, or I have found any. It's like a continuous research that never leads to anything. Okay, like you're never at the point where you're like, okay, done. Now I'm there. This never happens. So, but going through this process for me is refreshing. And the people that I meet are, you know, very interesting people. And I think also by talking to me, when I speak about these things, you understand that it's true. I'm not pretending something that I'm not, you know, is the true representation of myself. It has many like elements, which some people might think, oh, mate, like you're all over the place. What are you doing? Like, it's weird. Yeah, maybe it is, but who cares? Like, for me, it works.
Yeah.
That's all you care. And I hope that, you know, going forward, more people are able to find whatever works for them. That's why I'm saying that I'm someone that if you put me in a 9-to-5 job, structure that I have to do all the same things, I'm not like, I cannot do it. Like, it's very tough for me. I really suffer and I'll not deliver at my best as well. So I think the key element is to try to make people, I don't want to say happy because it's a bit cliche, but at least in line, you know, like let them hear their inner voice and then tune to it and then move in that direction rather than moving in all the other directions that society pushes you to. Because the problem, to be honest, right now is that from the moment you are born, you're always put in clusters, like school. Okay, Andrea, math, economics, do that, solve the test. Okay, you're great. More difficult. Compete with other person. Like, they always put you on some very like structured processes that they don't work for everybody. They don't, because people are different. And, you know, there are many other approaches, like, you know, like a Montessori kind of approach where, you know, they're more around letting the kids, you know, really, you know, find themselves what they're interested to. Of course, you know, the question is it a scalable model? Right now, probably not. But in a context where, as I said, people through technology, at least they have the basic needs. I think the basic needs, you know, you have a kid. If you have a kid, this person should at least have the very basic to live. Otherwise, you know, if you're in a very difficult position, it's a question that you should ask yourself. Shall I put in the world a new person that then has all this uncertainty in a context where, you know, even the macroeconomic situation is uncertain, et cetera, et cetera. So you provide that, you liberate people, and then everyone is on really trying to be honest with themselves. And you have technology that is helping us without us being slave of technology. Because right now we are mostly slave of technology. There was a documentary on Netflix I watched, I don't remember the name, around how platforms like Facebook, Instagram are designed. And a lot is around the gambling psychology.
Yeah.
So it's like a slot machine, okay? So when you are addicted to gambling, you want to go, right? You want to play the slot machine again. And Facebook and Instagram, they pretty much have similar dynamics. You want to refresh your feed. You want to see who put you like. And so you're a slave of that. You don't control it. It's not that technology is serving you. You are being like controlled by technology itself. Then, of course, they also have many, many positives in the sense that you can talk with so many people. You can connect, you know, with whoever you want. But my question is, can we have that without the negatives? I think we can. In a context where, you know, you disintermediate, you don't, you know, have... basically, the incentive is not for the operator of the network to feed you ads as much as possible and try to guide you to buy X or Y, which are anyway goods that probably you don't even need in the first place, and they want to push you to buy it. But you have it really by focusing on interactions. The true value is ensuring that Lloyd and Andrea are connected and they can talk.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that we want to achieve. And I think if you let, you know, if you have this like decentralized organization run by the users, run by the communities, you can at least do one step. You can be one step closer to that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think if you think about incentives, which rule behavior, in that scenario you've just given, Mark Zuckerberg had to think about how to monetize his platform. He didn't set out thinking about that. He thought this would be great to connect people. I do believe that, right? I think that's probably still the case, but you're constantly in this game of growth, more money, etc. And then the platform kind of becomes what it maybe wasn't meant to be. So the key here, Andrea, is that actually the investors and the funds stick true to what you're saying. Because if you put the value of your portfolio businesses on creating valuable communities in preference to where are our revenue levers, and you can find the revenue levers in something that incentivizes the right behavior, then we will have that future that you talk to, and everything will be fantastic. So good luck. I wish you all the best.
No, but what you see is that, you know, there are already many platforms that are approaching decentralized approaches and they're creating a lot of value. For all the people that are involved, not only the investors, but even the users themselves, that, as I said, can perform some very like basic actions from, you know, having a certain device in your house, from being like a node validator, and they get part of the pie. And then people, again, you know, we should embrace that we are different. It's an added value. One person would be like, they want to become a multimillionaire and buy a $5 million house. Do what you want, to be honest. Okay. As long as, you know, someone else is not dying in the street. Okay. You see what I mean? Like, so if we at least can focus on uplifting that segment, I think it will really be a positive thing for the future. In fact, I'm very positive on how the future looks like, as long as we embrace that technology, this technological revolution, and you know, we take care of more like existential issues like climate change and, you know, things like that, which are also very important.
Thank you so much. Absolutely fascinating. We'll put a bunch of links in the show notes, the book you recommended, link to your art. I don't think there's any way we can direct people to you busking, but
look out
for Andrea. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks a lot.